WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The death toll in the Texas flooding stands at 104 people, with at least 20 still missing. Ryan Loge is a volunteer searching through the wreckage for any possible survivors.
We have a ton of area to be searching. In the middle of the river, we've got piles of debris that are the size of multiple 18-wheelers in some places, and you can't see in it at all. So the possibility of victims being in there.
Officials facing questions over their preparedness and the speed of their initial actions during the flash flooding. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House again, telling President Trump he has nominated him for the Nobel Peace Prize. The president saying 25% taxes on goods imported from Japan and South Korea will kick in on August 1st. A notable change for security checks at airports. The TSA letting people know that for the first time in 20 years, they'll be able to keep their shoes on when traveling through checkpoints. This is ABC News.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The Devil Wears Prada is coming back, but not every cast member will return. The production started last week on Prada 2. Meryl Streep, Anne Hathaway, Emily Blunt, and Stanley Tucci are all back. Adrian Grenier, however, will not be back as Nate Cooper in the sequel. He played Anne Hathaway's love interest and a short order cook in the first film. Grenier's claim to fame is, of course, the show Entourage, but he has not done much since. In other casting news, actor Kenneth Branagh will join the production as Meryl Streep's character, Miranda Priestley's husband. There's a new action comedy that might be worth a look. Heads of State tells the story of the UK Prime Minister, played by Idris Elba, and the United States President, played by John Cena, which seems more realistic than it's ever been. The two characters butt heads but have to team up to overthrow a global plot that threatens freedom. The film is receiving a 66% on Rotten Tomatoes and an 85% audience score and can be streamed on Amazon Prime. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
A Brewers win over the Dodgers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers jumped out to an early lead and never looked back. They beat the Dodgers Monday night at American Family Field 9-1 in favor of Milwaukee. Former White Sox Andrew Vaughn, brought up because Rhys Hoskins is on the IL, came to the plate, bottom of the first, two outs on FanDuel Wisconsin.
And what a spot for Andrew Vaughn to make his Brewers debut at the plate right away. And Vaughn sends it way back.
Vaughn becoming only the fifth player in franchise history to hit a home run in his first at-bat as a Brewer. I asked him, what was it like?
He definitely blacked out running around the bases. You know, it was special and put us ahead on a really good pitcher and a really good team.
So the Brewers get ready for Game 2 Tuesday night. The Dodgers veteran Clayton Kershaw against Brewers rookie Jacob Mizorowski. From American Family Field with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
In sitcoms, when someone has a problem, they just blurt it out and move on.
Well, I lost my job and my parakeet is missing. How was your day?
But the real world is different. Managing life's challenges can be overwhelming. So, what do? We get support. The Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council have mental health resources available for you at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. See how much further you can go when you take care of your mental health.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Tom Kircher from Wisconsin Watch will be here to take a look at Wisconsin headlines, including back to the state budget and a what's worse for you, being sore or being sick. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy today with a few showers and storms around and a high in the upper 70s. Evening storms, then mostly clear tonight, cooler lows in the low 50s, and mostly sunny and a high in the mid 70s tomorrow. Dry Thursday, some rain Friday. Currently it's 59 degrees.
Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Tuesday, we'll meet a new candidate for state senate in southwest Wisconsin and Dan Schaefer from the recombobulation area on the new state budget.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Little advice for you on a Tuesday. If you've got outdoor plans, try to shift those activities into the morning hours. Welcome in, everybody. Fabulous Farm Bay PM Yaki right here on the Midwest Farm Report. I know you didn't ask for the advice, but I'm giving it anyhow. Why? Because this forecast calling for a good 50% chance of showers or thunderstorms probably happening after lunchtime. This morning should be nice, sunny. Highs near 81 with a little bit of a breeze out of the south, about 5 to 10 miles an hour. More rain in the forecast overnight, but Wednesday looks sunny. 82. Thursday, sunny and 83 before shower opportunities start to return on Friday. Now, I know a lot of you are full on county fair mode right now. You're always paying attention to the weather. So is Stu Muck, our ag meteorologist. He'll join us in about 15 minutes. Catching up with John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend. But next, what do you do if the audience, the consumers you're looking for, don't go to the dairy showcase? One dairy farmer in Fenimore, Wisconsin, is producing A2 protein cheese and milk. This is designed ideally for people that believe they're lactose intolerant or have just stomach problems whenever they try dairy. He's got an answer they might like. But if they're not coming near the dairy showcase to learn about it, how does he reach them? We're going to find out about that story next.
Rural Mutual Assurance. Keeping Wisconsin strong.
Rural Mutual Insurance is a proud sponsor of the Wisconsin State Fair. As a thank you for your support, they're giving away State Fair tickets. Visit ruralmutual.com/win and enter to win State Fair tickets.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
As a young person in agriculture, I wondered how I could make a difference in my community. But then I found Wisconsin Farm Bureau's Young Farmer and Agriculturist Program. It's more than a group. It's a chance to connect with others, grow as a leader, and advocate for agriculture. Together, we're shaping the future of farming in Wisconsin. Be a part of something big. Join us today.
A voice for farmers. A vision for agriculture. Wisconsin.
If you're involved in agriculture, you're involved in food production. And part of the responsibility of that job is helping consumers understand what you're growing and how it impacts them. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke. And that's where I introduce you to Lonnie Holthaus. Lonnie is a dairy farmer from Fenimore, Wisconsin, a longtime dairy equipment representative, as well as being a dairy producer. Well, when margins get tight on dairy farms and any farming operation, you look for new opportunities to either find efficiencies in your farming operation or maybe introduce new operations or new products. This is where A2 protein came into Lonnie Holthaus's life. A2 protein dairy is milk and other dairy products that have the A2 beta casein protein. Now, unlike regular milk, the A2 beta casein protein does not give people that have digestive challenges with dairy any problems at all. A2 milk generally comes from cows that naturally produce only the A2 beta casein protein. But what I've just explained to you took literally years for Lonnie Holthaus and his dairy farming family to learn. Let's hear the story about how A2 protein dairy has turned into Holthaus dairy and A2 cheese from their Fenimore farm.
My son came home from college and heard about A2 protein. And personally, I foo-fooed it. I thought it was just a whatever. So I started, we started doing investigating on the internet and started come looking. And the more I read, the more I looked at, the more it was like, oh my God, this is, there's something here.
Mm-hmm.
And, but we still didn't trust it. So we DNA tested, I don't forget what it was, maybe 15, 20, got, found enough cows to actually make cheese. And we had a small little cheese plant make a batch of cheese for us. And we started handing it out to people that we knew that had dairy issues. And every single one of them went, oh, my God, this works. And it was, looked at my son and my wife, and I go, I think we're on to something here. So from then on, it's been, and then COVID hit. Mm. You know, yeah. And it was just, we were breeding our cows to get to the point where we had enough to make it worthwhile. And we introduced the product. We concept the name back in 2020. Mm-hmm. We had a trailer bought. We were going to do demos and the whole thing. And then COVID hit and put an absolute stop to everything. And it's been kind of a learning curve from there. But one thing we did start doing, we started home delivering in Madison and Milwaukee about that time. And then that went over really well because nobody wanted to go out of the house. And we got hooked up with a company that was doing that. And we started making milk and started doing chocolate milk. We had Sassy Cow actually help us with that. And things were going gangbusters. And then the milk thing had to stop because Sassy Cow couldn't get the bottles anymore. Mm-hmm. So then we had, you know, he said, hey, I can't bottle yours and not have product for mine. So we kind of shut the milk down. And then the home delivery thing, when the COVID kind of faded away, the home delivery thing kind of faded away. And then we kind of started looking for our own distribution. And the more I learn, the less I know. Because mm-hmm. It's just, there's so much out there that I had no idea. I'm not a cheese guy. I'm a dairy farmer trying to find a niche to help pay the bills.
Well, and let's help people understand, A2 is not something that is processed mechanically. This is driven by the genetics of the cow.
A2 is in every drop of milk in the world, whether it's dairy cows, mother's milk, dogs, cats, everything that produces milk is already A2. Mm. The only difference between everything else and the dairy cow is the dairy cow also has a protein called A1. And the dairy cow is the only animal in the entire world that has that A1 protein. A2 is not new, but we didn't know what to call it. Do you call it A2 or do you call it A1 free? Well, if we call A1 free, no one would have a clue what the hell we're talking about. So we chose the name to say A2 protein, and it's not new. It's been in the cows have had it the whole time. But the A1 protein is the one that we've eliminated through genetics. It took about 10 years to actually get enough cows to
express
to get it done.
Mm. Now, did you find specific breeds that lent to that? I mean, just sourcing that kind of genetic can get to be a challenge.
Yeah, it's getting to the point though where the industry bulls now are pretty much A2, because I think the industry, I mean, it's up and coming, there's no doubt about it. The industry is definitely going to move that way, but I don't think it's ever going to be a mass production thing because there's too much other milk out there. Right. But I think the small dairies like us, if we can find the right connections and the right distribution, that but it's been a lot of work. You just don't open the doors and say, okay, I'm going to be in the A2 cheese business, because our biggest problem is getting the public to understand what it is.
Yeah.
Because no one knows, has a clue mm-hmm. what that there is actually a product out there that lactose intolerance or people that have been called dairy allergies, they can have it without any issues.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I've kind of watched this journey with you. And like you mentioned, you're a dairy farmer. That's your skill set. And then you had to figure out how much are we going to invest in the technology and the marketing to make this happen.
Yeah. If I knew more about social media, I'd be in a lot better shape because I know that's going to be our niche to try to get the word out, because whenever I get in front of somebody and they realize it, it's like a whole new world opens up to them. But when we do demos at cheese places like Hy-Vee and Woodman's and Vern's Cheese, the people that walk up to us are people who already can have cheese. The ones that walk away from us and avoid us, they're the ones I need to be talking to.
Right, that's a good point.
It's a tough, and I put a seminar on for a big grocery chain in Minneapolis, and I told them, I said, every person that walks through that front door that can't have cheese is not walking to the dairy case. and you're missing out on 50% of your customers because they have no reason to go there because they don't think they can have anything.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing that I was curious about, because you mentioned that you pivoted from bottled milk as a major outlet, and now every time I turn around, you've got a different flavored cheese. What about the recipes and the creation of those products? Again, you know the industry, but not that wedge of the industry.
I don't know that industry at all. We were really fortunate to find a cheese plant that does custom processing for us. I don't have the money to build the cheese plant. I told my economic director this. I said, hey, this is what we want to do, but I don't want to invest $1 million and cross my fingers and hope that it works. I want to build the market first. And once I build the market, the rest will just fall into place, I feel. Mm-hmm. But we ran into a really, really awesome bunch of people at Cedar Grove Dairy or Cedar Grove Creamery in Plain, and they've been absolutely awesome. And they have a great reputation.
Oh, my God.
And they've done – the minute we tasted some of their products, my wife told me – this was like 10 years ago. She said, if we ever do cheese, they're going to be doing our cheese for us.
Yep.
And we feel fortunate to find them. They see the vision that we have, and they're trying to make they're working with us as much as we can. They're busy people, but they always seem to get me squeezed in and always seem to make it work. And with their processing and with our milk, our mozzarella actually won 15th in the world a year ago, and just last week our Colby got a gold rating at the Los Angeles International Dairy Competition. So,
nice.
we make a good combination between Cedar Grove and our A2 milk. It's really gone over well.
Yeah, going over well now. But after years of thought, investigation, education, research, and investment, Lonnie Holthaus from Fenimore, Wisconsin. He and his family own and operate Milk House Dairy, providing people that have experienced physical discomfort when they try dairy an option with his A2 milk. And again, this A2 milk comes from cows that naturally produce only the A2 beta casein protein. You can find out more about their farm and, of course, some of the products that they have managed to pull together at milkhousedairy.com. Milkhouse, spelled milk, H-A-U-S, dairy.com. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Waba.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In a recent report, we told you that 96% of New York City voters found ranked choice voting easy to use and liked that it gave voters more options. So why have 17 states banned ranked choice voting, including 5 just this year? Pro-voter groups tout RCV because it allows voters to choose a favorite candidate without being a spoiler, can reduce negative ads and rhetoric, and eliminates expensive runoff elections. Alaska implemented ranked choice voting in 2022's congressional race, but after upstart Democrat Mary Pottola defeated former Republican Governor Sarah Palin, RCV was blamed. A resolution by the Republican National Committee opposing RCV nationally followed, and Alaska voters had to beat back a repeal initiative in 2024. While used in Maine, Alaska, D.C., and 47 municipalities nationwide, 17 red states have now banned it, including Kansas, North Dakota, West Virginia, Wyoming, and Arkansas. Party leadership and the RNC resolution argue that RCV is hard to understand and suppresses turnout. But where it's been implemented, voter satisfaction is often over 80%. In the New York City primary, 9 of 10 voters said they understood it, and turnout was the highest in decades. Organizers have more work to do. Voters defeated pro-RCV ballot measures in 5 states last year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to like bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Maggie Dawn.
Lindsay Owens joins me at 5 o'clock to talk about the impacts of the big brutal bill on your pocketbook, as well as Donald Trump's renewed train war. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
And I'm going to be starting my tour this afternoon. I think that's just about when the next round of rain is supposed to come in, isn't it?
Well, there is that chance, Pam, but then again, there's an equal chance you may not see anything. So.
Oh, good. I'm throwing boots in the truck anyhow, but I do see that we're supposed to see sunshine. That should be a good thing. Linda from Reeseville said 2/10 of an inch of rain that they've picked up overnight. One just quick pop, a heavy downpour. Hope that's the end of it.
Yeah, it's kind of hit or miss scattered. I mean, I do see that Madison at the airport claims last evening you had about 4,700ths of an inch. I also saw Milwaukee at 2,400ths of an inch early this morning. Eau Claire with a little 1/100th. The radar indicating a little cluster of showers. West Bend pushing southeast toward the lakeshore this morning. Otherwise, around Wisconsin, very quiet. Rain up in the western UP, down in south central Iowa into Missouri. There is a low pressure system trying to pull a cool front toward the state. I'd expect that into western Wisconsin, I'm looking far north, Park Falls and Hayward and Eau Claire, there may be some rain chance even on toward late this morning or into the afternoon, and then that spreads further east and southeast down toward where you're heading, Pam, by late afternoon, and that finally kind of slides across the rest of the state by this evening and into the nighttime. Kind of hit or miss, not going to be a real widespread big rain. Rainfall amounts up to 1/10 of an inch or maybe 2. I don't expect much more than that. That front clears through. Temperatures stay still mild. I'd say low 80s around here the next several days, mid 80s in western Wisconsin, probably tomorrow. And then by late Wednesday into Thursday, a warm front starts to build up out of the west. That stationary front still off to our south, lining up from Nebraska to Missouri and Illinois and Indiana, pulls up as a warm front. That's why later Thursday, may not be until late Thursday night in far eastern Wisconsin or into Friday then, that the next round of some rain could develop, showers or storms. Again, I don't expect major storminess, but there'll be some more rain to wrap up the week and mild air sticking around after rain. Sticky, yeah, that's all part of it. Warm and sticky weather, I expect, is what's going to be here as we make our way through the weekend and on into next week. Great for crop growth, no doubt about that. If you're making hay, you got to kind of pick your times. I'll check forecast details right after this.
There goes Pam Yonke across Wisconsin in her suburban truck. Thanks to Equity Livestock Cooperative, marketing your livestock, financing your operation, and supporting the livestock community since 1922. And to Cleary Building Corp. Cleary Building Corp. Built with pride before the shamrock is applied. Explore clearybuilding.com today. Keep up with Pam at MidwestFarmReport.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
Food insecurity is a growing problem in America. Over 47 million people. More people face hunger today than during the COVID pandemic. One of every five children in America is food insecure. And hunger isn't just an urban issue. Almost 90% of the most food insecure counties are rural. The National Association of Farm Broadcasting invites you to lend a hand and help end hunger. Go to NAFBHunger.com.
All righty, Stu, let's have a few more details on that forecast, please.
Absolutely. Let's look at today. Of course, there may still be that very scattered shower in the east this morning and far in the northwest by late morning or into the afternoon. Gradually through the day, that chance of rain, and especially late afternoon and evening, will push through from west to east. A fair amount of sun today, call it partly sunny, and a lot of low 80s, maybe a mid 80 in the west with those south winds, 5 to 10, gradually shifting west. Some rain chance holds tonight, ending from west to east, of course, through the nighttime. And temps overnight down in the very upper 50s and low 60s with a northwest breeze. Mostly sunny Wednesday in the low 80s. And by Thursday, Pam, mostly sunny, pushing back toward mid-80s. And then the late Wednesday, and especially Thursday into Thursday night, some rain moves in with that next system and a little damp to wrap up the week.
Well, we're going to have to keep an eye on that. It's county fair season, Stu. You know it as well as I do. So we've got Jefferson, Sauk, Lodi fairs just in our primary area. But there's a lot of fairs that are kind of waiting to see exactly when rain's going to occur and how much, you know?
And I'll be a wise guy. Would it be a county fair if it didn't rain?
Yes, that's true. But at least if I'm showing livestock better this week than last.
Yeah, that's for sure, yes.
All right, buddy, thanks. Stumach, ag meteorologist, joining us on a Tuesday morning with all the details you are looking for. Speaking of details, market details on the way with John Heinberg from Total Farm Marketing. Stick around.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Jahnke.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allbald Show.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. Here's a portion of a conversation recently had on the John and Gordy Show with writer Mike McCabe about the history of milk strikes in Wisconsin.
You know, a lot of people don't know about the milk strikes of 1933.
I did not know.
Not taught in school. Not something that is on very many people's radar. But
well, tell us about it.
Yeah, in the area I'm talking about, where all this started, where the milk strikes were born, is today the reddest of red areas in our country. It is a MAGA Republican stronghold today.
Yeah,
and in the late 1920s and early 1930s, this was a hotbed of progressivism.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. And farmers had had it. They weren't getting fair prices. And so they just decided, doggone it, we're going to organize. And in Abbotsford, Wisconsin, which is not far from where our farm was as I was growing up, not far from where the town where my novel is set is at, farmers came together, hundreds of farmers came together to start to organize to withhold their milk. And then not too long after that, 5,000 farmers showed up in nearby Marshfield to continue the organizing campaign. And eventually over 100,000 farmers in Wisconsin had joined the milk strike. They were dumping milk at the roadside and on railroad tracks, and they were blocking, shipment of milk to creameries, to places where it was bottled or made into cheese. They even were blowing up some cheese factories and creameries with dynamite. Wow. They were obstructing the roads, erecting blockades to prevent trucks from getting milk products to Madison and Milwaukee.
Wow.
They just decided we're going to shut everything down. There's not going to be milk or any milk products anywhere in the state of Wisconsin. This eventually spread to other dairy states across the country. And this strike got even bigger until it led to massive reform of milk pricing in what became the very first farm bill ever enacted by Congress.
Find out more about the John and Gordy Show and our entire lineup at civicmedia.us.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The death toll in the Texas flooding stands at 104 people, with at least 20 still missing. Ryan Loge is a volunteer searching through the wreckage for any possible survivors.
We have a ton of area to be searching. In the middle of the river, we've got piles of debris that are the size of multiple 18-wheelers in some places. and you can't see in it at all. So the possibility of victims being in there.
Officials facing questions over their preparedness and the speed of their initial actions during the flash flooding. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House again, telling President Trump he has nominated him for the Nobel Peace Prize. The president saying 25% taxes on goods imported from Japan and South Korea will kick in on August 1st. A notable change for security checks at airports. The TSA letting people know that for the first time in 20 years, they'll be able to keep their shoes on when traveling through checkpoints. This is ABC News.
A Brewers win over the Dodgers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers jumped out to an early lead and never looked back. They beat the Dodgers Monday night at American Family Field 9-1 in favor of Milwaukee. Former White Sox Andrew Vaughn, brought up because Rhys Hoskins is on the IL, came to the plate, bottom of the first, two outs on FanDuel Wisconsin.
And what a spot for Andrew Vaughn to make his Brewers debut at the plate right away. And Vaughn sends it way!
Vaughn becoming only the fifth player in franchise history to hit a home run in his first at-bat as a Brewer. I asked him, what was it like?
He definitely blacked out running around the bases. You know, it was special and put us ahead on a really good pitcher and really good teams.
So the Brewers get ready for Game 2 Tuesday night. The Dodgers veteran Clayton Kershaw against Brewers rookie Jacob Mizorowski. From American Family Field with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Jobs for someone with autism. Programmer. Teacher.
WIN by Autism Speaks helps businesses lead the way in inclusive hiring.
How about a healthcare worker?
To learn more, go to autismspeaks.org/win.
It's the Eco Minute powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. The website climate.gov is no more. The site that served as a...
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy today with a few showers and storms around and a high in the upper 70s. Evening storms, then mostly clear tonight, cooler lows in the low 50s, and mostly sunny and a high in the mid-70s tomorrow. Dry Thursday, some rain Friday. Currently 57 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In a recent report, we told you that 96% of New York City voters found ranked choice voting easy to use and liked that it gave voters more options. So why have 17 states banned ranked choice voting, including 5 just this year? Pro-voter groups tout RCV because it allows voters to choose a favorite candidate without being a spoiler, can reduce negative ads and rhetoric, and eliminates expensive runoff elections. Alaska implemented ranked choice voting in 2022's congressional race, but after upstart Democrat Mary Pottola defeated former Republican Governor Sarah Palin, RCV was blamed. A resolution by the Republican National Committee opposing RCV nationally followed, and Alaska voters had to beat back a repeal initiative in 2024. While used in Maine, Alaska, D.C., and 47 municipalities nationwide, 17 red states have now banned it, including Kansas, North Dakota, West Virginia, Wyoming, and Arkansas.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on Civic Media Radio. We now take you to a recent Darren Von Rudin appearance on Matinee on Air.
We did want to start off with this, and this is from Lucas Hunt, a Civic Media news reporter.
Nice.
On our Civic Media website, U.S. Representative Derek Van Orden made an appearance at a cheese plant last Thursday where he voiced support for the Trump administration tariffs. I'm just wondering if you happen to be in that audience, Darren, is it, or did folks you know talk about this?
No, I was not present for that event, but I have heard a few different comments from some of the individuals that were either there or seen press releases of it.
And what have you heard from folks?
Well, you know, not necessarily happy. You know, the tariffs are something that's really turned this country around and not necessarily in a good way. You know, it's, yes, short-term gain, but I think there's going to be a lot of long-term effects from it that are not going to be on the positive side. So how do we, you know, go about doing our business when we're not sure if we're going to have a market 6 weeks or 2 years from now?
And I'm sure that Derek Van Orden had all kinds of specifics about what he's going to do. Oh, wait, no, that's probably not what happened.
Yeah, you know, it seems pretty vague, and certainly looking at this big, beautiful bill that's being talked about in D.C. right now, he said that he's going to protect the nutrition title of the farm bill to the last extent, which means that he should be voting no on that bill. He voted yes on it because there's $230 billion that's going to be cut from it over the next 10 years. So how is that helping the people that are in most need, which at one point in time in his life, he was one of those people.
That's something he was, you know, we have on video and we've played it on various shows, and he not only made a very, very impassioned argument for protecting specifically SNAP. He was talking about SNAP benefits, but he also, I mean, accused the Democrats of lying. And to me, this is a not Democrat or Republican issue. This is a helping people issue. And that SNAP benefit issue is within the farm bill, if I'm not mistaken. Correct, Aaron?
That is correct. That's where it's at. And, you know, currently there's 160 plus Republicans that are trying to separate the SNAP title or the nutrition title from the farm bill and trying to make it a farm specific and a nutrition specific bills, which is not good because food and agriculture are all in one. And so let's keep them together.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Ultimately, I think there's something to be said for winning on the field.
Well, the markets are not necessarily performing in the direction we were hoping they would. Commodities had a tough Monday. What's going on with the marketplace? Well, that's our job. Welcome back to the Midwest Farm Report. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke. We'll take a closer look at a very robust crop progress report for Wisconsin farm fields, and then we'll tie it up with John Heinberg's conversation. He's joining us later this hour to talk about some of the influences in the marketplace. He is, of course, a market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend. Also on the way, you might have heard the story of a man that was at Dulles International Airport, Washington, D.C., and he assaulted a USDA customs officer. It wasn't a two-legged customs officer he assaulted. It was a four-legged. That story just a moment away. I am Pam Yonke. So glad you're along with us on this, the 8th day of July. What can I tell you? Well, here's one perfect for the farm show. On this day in 1881, druggist and soda fountain owner Ed Berners in Two Rivers was asked by a customer to top a dish of ice cream with chocolate sauce, an ingredient before that had only been used in ice cream sodas. It was tasty. It was popular. Although he only served it on Sundays, that, according to H.L. Mencken, is how the ice cream sundae got its official name, after that little girl wanted a dish of ice cream with that stuff on top. Hopefully this is clear in the community of Two Rivers. You helped launch the ice cream sundae on this day, 1881. On this day, 1889, The Wall Street Journal is published for the first time. Three financial reporters came together: Charles Dow, Edward Jones, and Charles Bergstresser, created the Wall Street Journal to beat out a competitor periodical called the Customer's Afternoon Letter. And happy birthday to actress Angelica Houston, 74 years young today, and now you know. So the incident I just told you about, a USDA customs officer is basically attacked by a 70-year-old Egyptian national at Washington Dulles International Airport. It wasn't a two-legged customs officer. It was a four-legged officer, a 5-year-old beagle named Freddy. He is part of USDA's Beagle Brigade, making sure that they are detecting contraband coming into the United States. And Ben Jarbo was one person that got a chance to meet Freddie and his handler.
If you have ever been a dog owner, you probably notice that your furry companion uses their nose to get them in all kinds of trouble, whether it be by sniffing out animals in the yard, food in the garbage, or many other smells that you have never noticed. Well, the USDA is using their powerful noses to make sure that agriculture in the U.S. stays safe. I am Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and Carrie Thomas, a deputy director with USDA APHIS, shares some examples of how our furry friends' powerful noses are able to detect some unique scents from around the world.
The Mexican fruit fly is a serious pest to various fruits, particularly citrus and mango. In Texas, agricultural officials work with detector dogs to find invasive fruit fly larvae in infested fruit. Our center trained the canines to discriminate between different species of fruit flies, and the canines patrol citrus orchards along the Texas-Mexico border, as well as farmers markets, in search of invasive fruit flies. In Oregon, our dogs are helping to detect Japanese beetles, which are a common invasive pest in the eastern U.S., but are not yet widely distributed in the west. In 2021, the Oregon Department of Agriculture tested a pilot project using canines to find this invasive pest. The NDTTC successfully trained a canine named Bradley to detect Japanese beetle larvae in parks, farms, residential areas, and the Oregon Zoo. I also have a few examples of work we are supporting in Hawaii. Giant African land snails, which are native to East Africa, have been found in Florida and Hawaii. In addition to being a vector for plant diseases, this snail is a carrier of rat lung parasite, which makes it a public health threat, and local agencies are working to eradicate this pest. To assist this effort, USDA scientists worked with NDDTC staff to develop and test scent packets to use in canine training, and the Detector Dog Training Center now maintains several giant African snail-trained canines that are available to assist local agencies. The center also trains dogs to stop invasive brown tree snakes from reaching Hawaii, the Mariana Islands, and Saipan. Brown tree snakes have caused the extinction of several bird species in Guam, and we do not want them to reach other locales where they might do the same ecological damage. There are currently 23 canine teams used by USDA's Wildlife Services Program to detect brown tree snakes in outbound cargo and aircraft departing Guam, destined for Hawaii and countries throughout the Pacific. Additionally, the center has trained two canine teams that help the Hawaii Department of Agriculture and the University of Hawaii at Manoa to detect invasive coconut rhinoceros beetle larvae in green waste piles. In California, the California Department of Food and Agriculture uses APHIS-trained canine teams to detect fruit and plant materials at package facilities and regional post offices in 11 counties. Additionally, in 2021, detector canines worked in Kern County, California, with the Citrus Pest Detection Program to detect the Asian citrus psyllid, the insect that causes citrus greening disease. And in Arizona, canines were also used to detect Asian citrus psyllid in orchards and residential areas. In North Carolina, the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services received two canine teams to detect spotted lanternfly egg masses. Canines will search for the egg masses at transportation depots, in nursery stocks, vineyards, and Christmas tree farms, among other high-risk areas. And these canines serve as a new line of defense against spotted lanternfly in North Carolina. In Maryland, USDA's Wildlife Services recently eradicated the invasive rodent Nutria, an aquatic pest that destroys wetlands in the U.S. Nutria canines are trained to bark when they smell Nutria scat. Five canine teams helped to eradicate Nutria from Maryland's eastern shore and are now seeking out the damaging rodents in other states. And finally, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has used several canine teams working on the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, also known as CITES, material detection in air cargo warehouses, ocean containers, international mail facilities, and U.S.-Mexico border crossings. Canines are initially trained to detect odors such as ivory, python skins, turtle shells, and seahorse, and then expand their odor repertoire in the field.
As Thomas says, these four-legged heroes are the first line of defense to protect American agriculture from invasive species coming in from around the world. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
Jan is a single mom with two growing kids. She's working two jobs to make ends meet and gets home just in time to tuck them in for bed.
Mommy, I'm hungry.
In every community, people are working, yet over 47 million people face hunger. You can help. The National Association of Farm Broadcasting invites you to help people facing hunger, including one out of every five children. Your donation stays in your community. Go to nafbhunger.com and help end hunger.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
It looks like Wisconsin farmers have very little to complain about when it comes to the crops that they're growing. The latest update from the Wisconsin Ag Statistical Service shows 77% of our corn in the state is rated good to excellent. That's up 2 percentage points in a week. Soybeans, 75% of that crop called good to excellent. 80% of our winter wheat has started to change color, sign of near harvest ready. 71% of that winter wheat called good to excellent, but that's down a percentage point. 88% of our potatoes look good to excellent. About 81% of our oats look good to excellent. You know, those kind of robust crop ratings are not unique to Wisconsin, but it's happening all across the United States. That's part of the reason why markets are lower in overnight electronic trade. As we get started this morning, the September corn's down 2, December new crop corn down 3 right now at 418. August soybeans are down 4, November new crop down a penny, 1019. The wheat for September's down a nickel at 5.43. December wheat down 6 at 5.65. Barrel cheese on Monday was down a penny at 1.71. 40-pound block cheese stood still. Well, the AA butter gained penny and a half to 2.62 a pound. The August Class 3 milk that goes into cheese is up 4 right now at 18.18 a hundredweight. September's unchanged at 18.77. 100 weights. How does the market view this outstanding crop we're producing? And is the big, beautiful bill something they're paying attention to? Those are the questions on the top of my mind. We'll talk with John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing, next.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt and Air on Air.
We want to help you promote your community event for free. Tell us about your nonprofit group or organization's upcoming event, and we'll help you promote it on the Buzz of the North. Email us the information or a copy of the flyer to community@whsm.com. That's community@whsm.com. You can also drop off your flyer at our office on East 3rd Street in Hayward, or mail it to 16880 W, Highway 63, Hayward, 54843. Hometown Radio Refreshed on 96.9 WBZH.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Trump is again trying to have it both ways on agricultural workers. He says they're working on, quote, a temporary pass where the farmer can have a little control as opposed to you walk in and take everybody away. He's describing feudalism, where the people who work the land are more under direct control of the land owners rather than the rule of law. He wants the vassals. He wants the lords. He wants the peasants.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Matt and Air on Air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Tom Kircher from Wisconsin Watch will be here to take a look at Wisconsin headlines, including back to the state budget and a what's worse for you, being sore or being sick. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Otherwise, in Wisconsin or outside our borders, and that's been a bit of a drag on the market. The other, I guess, great unknown is what's going on with tariffs. We haven't talked about those for a while. That doesn't mean they've gone away.
No, they haven't. And actually, we were coming to the deadline here of July 9th when he extended, President Trump extended that original tariff proposals that he was putting out there. So we got some new news on some tariffs and things of that nature yesterday, which, you know, the market was already in sell mode because of this beautiful weather and the lack of trade announcements from President Trump last week. And, you know, we really came in the Sunday night selling hard and then following through a little bit more here today. And then about mid-morning yesterday, we got another announcement from President Trump that he was setting 25% tariffs on South Korea and Japan starting August 1st. Obviously, when we start talking about grain markets or U.S. ag products, Japan is a major customer. So I think that added to the selling pressure yesterday, as well as South Korea is one of the, you know, top handful of purchasers of U.S. goods in that regard. So again, I think that weighed on the markets, at least the grain markets, just added a little bit more fuel to the fire. So again, we'll have to see how things shape up as we get closer to August 1st. Then I see on the overnight, he announced another handful of tariffs on another set of countries. Again, some of them not the major players in terms of the ag commodity space, but, you know, they're still buyers of U.S. products. So again, we're building that nice little atmosphere here where we got a fairly negative trend. You got good weather, you got great crop ratings, things of that nature. And it's going to be just a real difficult time, I think, for the grain markets here. Now, maybe if we can't hold today's the lows from last week where we're poking at today, then it feels like we got some room to slide here, maybe working to that, you know, end of summer, fall type low.
John Heinberg, Market Advisor with Total Farm Marketing, is on the Midwest Farm Report. His website, totalfarmmarketing.com. You can always give John a call, too, 800-334-9779. Like you said, John, there's really not much to say negative about our U.S. crops, and I see some are underway with winter wheat harvest. What are you hearing?
Yeah, well, harvest is starting to go for wheat right now, as well as some of the spring wheat planted in the eastern side. A client actually harvested we classified it as a great crop of wheat in Ohio over the weekend. First, some of that KC wheat, that's been going on in terms of harvest. A little bit of concern on the quality side, the protein side there, because of the wetness that they've seen over the last handful of weeks. So, again, that's a little bit of a factor there. But, you know, the wheat market is just one of those markets where somebody producing wheat, harvesting wheat somewhere in the world at some time, and it just now it's our turn to be the harvesters of things. That just makes it very difficult for prices to get any footing. Again, as wheat futures kind of fell apart after trying to rally here last week, like the rest of the other grains. But we're going to start seeing those bushels start moving, adding to some of the selling pressure that we see in the commodity space or the grain space here over the next handful of weeks.
Again, let's talk a little bit about, I won't say risk management, but if you're telling me that we may have seen our seasonal highs so far, John, now I'm trying to strategically plan what to do next. Some folks have already taken a position in the marketplace. A lot of farmers in Wisconsin might have been apprehensive about taking a position until they knew what they've got. Where do I go from here then?
Yeah, that's the typical conversations. I'm having a lot of those right now because I would say producers are very undersold in terms of the new crop, corn, soybean markets. I mean, obviously the market hasn't given a lot of opportunities at all this year. So here's two different ways you handle it. Number one, you get control of your bushels that you have that are unpriced using put strategies, put some type of floor underneath here. I'm looking at a possible target around the 380 window. So that's another 40 cents down from where December corn is trading this morning, you know, so there's still some room for some more downside movement. And then we start thinking about the marketing plan. If you do make sales, you know, sometimes people don't like the re-own, but like last year, all of a sudden the weather shut off and we had a dry finish and that market took that seasonal low and rallied 90 cents into the end of the year. You know, so those those types of strategies are out there if producers are behind on sales at this time frame. So really it's just going to come down to one-on-one conversations, try to get control of those unpriced bushels of some form, you know, stop the bleeding per se if this market wants to make another leg down, which at least at starting this week feels like it wants to do that. And seasonally, that's the path we usually take.
John Heimberg, market advisor, Total Farm Marketing in West Bend, along with us, 800-334-9779, 800-334-9779, totalfarmmarketing.com. How are you getting, what's your litmus test on how growers are feeling right now, John? Are they apprehensive? Do they feel really confident about the crop they've got? Maybe, do you ever talk to lenders? How do they feel about things?
You know, right now, one of the things that we're always talking about, and we talk about it with ourselves in the office, is usually you got somebody at least saying there's an issue, or they say, hey, my neighbor down the road, or hey, the next town over has got issues. I haven't heard anything this year, and the crop ratings continue to show that. And even to look at the other side of this, 5% of this crop is poor to very poor. That's very small. Last year, we were 79% poor to very poor. So this just kind of tells you that we got a pretty good crop of corn coming here, as well as soybeans. Soybeans a little bit lagger, but they usually take a little longer to get kicked in based on the weather here in July. So it's just one of those situations right now. We got a big crop coming. I'm going to be on the road this week. I'm going to be down into Kentucky, so I'll get to see Illinois and Indiana corn, see what that looks like. And right now, my impressions are that there's farmers are pretty comfortable that they're going to have a large supply this fall.
When does the official crop tour go out? I can't remember.
That's usually mid-August or the back third of August, and we see that start going out and getting those numbers. And that's also when the USDA will make their first adjustments on yield, which this market think is going to be pretty big over that trend line.
Yeah, I would guess. Thanks, John. John Heinberg, market advisor, Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend. TotalFarmMarketing.com, 800-334-9779 if you want to have a chat with him. We'll chat with you again tomorrow morning. Have a great Tuesday, everybody.
This, the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones. Check 511WI.gov or download the app for road work or closures on your route. Know before you go with 511 Wisconsin, sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
A call for global standards for agricultural sustainability. Up next on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community. And while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. A British farmer has suggestions for a more sustainable agriculture. Patrick Holden founded the Sustainable Food Trust in the UK. He'd like to see a system of universal standards for valuing sustainable ag practices above and beyond market prices.
It's really important that we put a price on these externalities, both positive and negative. But before we do that, we need to measure them. And in an ideal world, we need to measure them using a common framework so that I could go onto a farm in New England or in the Corn Belt or wherever and say, what is your sustainability assessment on climate, nature, and social outcomes? And the language and the measurement framework we would be using would be the same.
Holden says regenerative ag practices are added value.
Not only do we not cause the damage by practicing a better farming system, but also we are not being rewarded for the positive externalities, the recreated soil, capital, and carbon the biodiversity and the improvements in human health, which our farming systems and the people who eat our food will experience. And it seems to me that until we correct that, we're going to remain relatively marginal.
Holden appeared in the Food Talk podcast. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Tuesday, we'll meet a new candidate for state senate in southwest Wisconsin and Dan Schaefer from the recombobulation area on the new state budget.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. The Todd Albaugh Show.
I get why you, Senator Royce, were a no vote on this budget. I think the people that voted no on this were standing up for public education.
I think that's exactly right. We heard from people loud and clear in this budget cycle and 2 years ago, the number one priority that people asked for, whether they called, emailed, or showed up at the public hearings, they want our schools funded. Our kids deserve better schools. They have been underfunded for decades, and it is time for us to prioritize public education.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app, The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Vigils held across Texas in the wake of catastrophic weekend flooding in Texas Hill Country. Pastor Alex Lara is from Elevate Church in San Antonio.
On the way over here, I was contemplating, what should I say? And immediately what came to my mind and heart were the words of the mighty Martin Luther King. And he said, darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can drive out darkness.
The death toll, at least 104 people, at least 20 still missing. Hamas says 18 people were killed in Israeli airstrikes overnight. Israel says 5 IDF soldiers were killed in an attack in northern Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House telling President Trump he's nominating Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize. The president says the U.S. will be sending more weapons to Ukraine days after ordering a pause in deliveries. U.S. officials say the Defense Department is worried about its own supplies. This is ABC News.